A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church at Spring Lake, Michigan, on October 14, 1990, in the series The Church on the Way to the Future, entitled Is There One True Religion? The scripture readings are Romans 2, verses 11 through 16, and chapter 3, verses 28 through 31. The text for the sermon is Romans 3, verse 29. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
For a few Sunday mornings, I want to invite you to some reflection with me on the church on the way to the future. We are on the threshold of the final decade of the 20th century. And not only the final decade of the 20th century, but the final decade of the second millennium. And certainly, this is a critical time in the history of the world, in the history of humankind. It's a fascinating, interesting, perilous, promising world in which, as the church, we need to be cognizant of who we are and what God is calling us to be, in order that as a church we might be a part of the solution to the world's problems and not, as seems to be so true of so much religion in our world today, a part of the problem, the cause of great threat to the peace and well-being of the world. Religion is a powerful thing. It's a powerful force. And it has great power for good or for ill. And in the world become as small as our world, as interconnected as our world, with as much interdependence as is true of our world already and will become more true, I believe that it is incumbent upon us to probe our own foundations and be certain that we understand our own tradition, to understand our own rootedness in a particular tradition and historical context, and then be able to enter into the dialogue, the broader expanse of the earth, being instruments for reconciliation and for peace. And so, for a few weeks, let's think about the church on the way to the future, the role of the church in a world that is moving into century 21. It's a world of religion, and we need to understand ourselves in a world that is full of religion. At the end of this month, Dr. Ari Brower, who's had world experience in the conciliar movement of the church, the World Council and the National Council, will be with us to bring that world perspective to what's going on in the world church. Time of the Reformation, we want to look again at the church as being one Catholic church, but always in need of reformation. Then take a look at our book, the source of the norm of our faith and our life, the Bible, and at the celebration of the sacraments, which are the signs and the seals of God's grace to us as we have come to know God through Jesus Christ. So that's the menu for the next few weeks. And I can do a little more this morning than to open the question about the relationship of Christian faith to other faiths. And I thought I would state the issue somewhat ambiguously. Not really. I couldn't be much blunter about it, could I? Is there one true religion? Well, if you've been duly catechized in the Christian church, in whatever confessional family you might have been nurtured, you will know the answer immediately, for it has been given historically, traditionally, simplistically. The answer is yes, there is one true religion, and we got it. We got it. Well, I find that if one raises a question about that, one tends to create a lot of anxiety in the hearts of many people, because it seems as though our Christian commitment has a dimension about it which requires that it not only be true, but that it alone be true. The Christian faith, the Christian tradition, in its various traditional family groupings, has largely been an exclusivistic faith. We have the truth of God in Jesus Christ and are called to bring the rest of the world into the fold, into the Christian church. To challenge that or to question that, as I said, can be very threatening. A couple of years ago, I raised an issue in Perspectives, the theological journal in which I write. I raised the question of the extent of God's grace, and I suggested that maybe God's grace was broader than we had ever dared dream. And I got a lot of fan mail. And in February of this past year, being a glutton for punishment, I wrote an editorial in an issue whose theme was pluralism, that is, the plurality of religions in the world. And I found that I was as popular again as I was the year before. In fact, it seems as though that I'm the only one on the board of editors that ever gets any fan mail. There must be something wrong with me, I think. But I found it was a very threatening suggestion that Christian faith may be true, or is true, we believe, but not exclusively true. That it may be that there is a genuine revelation of God beyond the confines of the Christian church. That there is in the human heart, perhaps in the very constitution of human nature, some manner or degree of revelation of God that holds a person cognizant that God is and that such a person is responsible and accountable to God. The traditional church over the centuries has been exclusive in its claim to truth. But in the Second Vatican Council in the 60s, the Roman Catholic Church made a significant move for the first time in its history, in which it recognized the truth in other religions and recognized salvation accessible or available through other faiths. That was quite a step for the Roman Catholic Church. In 1983 at Vancouver at the Assembly of the World Council of Churches, the Protestants were not quite so ready to make that acknowledgement. They had a horrendous fight over this statement. While affirming the uniqueness of the birth, life, death, and resurrection of Jesus, to which we bear witness, we recognize God's creative work in the religious experience of people of other faiths. Now, the trick words, the scary, threatening words are, we recognize God's creative work in the religious experience of people of other faiths. That would seem to indicate that God is at work creatively in the religious experience of people of other faiths than Christian faith. That's what some committee or some study group wanted the assembly to adopt. Well, they sent it back to committee. And I think there were some 68 attempts to rephrase that statement. And finally, what came out was not we recognize God's creative work in the religious experience of people of other faiths, but rather this. We recognize God's creative work in the seeking for religious truth among people of other faiths. Now, do you get the distinction? The committee, first of all, had said, in the experience, the religious experience of people of other faiths, God is at work. God is at work creatively. What the assembly finally passed was that God is at work creatively in the seeking. So, the World Council of Churches stopped short of acknowledging that God may be creatively present and working in the religious experience of other faiths. It simply acknowledged that where there are other faiths, where people are seeking, there God is creatively at work. And of course, the follow-up would be seeking, and when they find, then we can say God is creatively at work in their experience itself. It may sound like a little thing, but it's a big thing. It is a major distinction. I am suggesting to you that the first formulation is where I am, and that I believe the World Council of Churches backed off, showing less courage and less foresight than the Roman Catholic Church some years earlier in the Second Vatican Council, when it acknowledged that God is at work beyond the confines of the Christian Church, and that in other faiths and other human experience, God's Spirit is genuinely at work. Now, I think that in the long run, the position that God is creatively at work in the religious experience of other faiths is the only position that will be able to stand the light of day. I believe in the long run, that is going to come to be adopted by the church generally. But I believe that the church, as always, will have to be dragged kicking and screaming into that admission. Because for some reason or other, we have been so programmed and conditioned to feel the necessity not only of having the truth, but of having the only truth and the only ones to have the truth, that we will back off of that with only with very great difficulty. But if we don't back off from that, then there can really be no genuine dialogue among the religions. And if there is no genuine dialogue among the religions, then religion will continue to be an explosive force that will have perilous potential for world disaster. All I need to mention is Saddam Hussein, who, as perhaps the most secular of the Islamic rulers, nonetheless is willing to fire up the Islamic masses using religious rhetoric and religious symbolism in order to unite a people, in order to what? Who would have thought that in the course of the last few months, the course of this year past, when the world was so revolutionized, so transformed, when freedom and apparent potential peace, the unblocking of the ideological impasse that has held us on the brink of disaster all these years, who would have thought that today, this fall, 1990, we would still be holding our breath knowing the possibility of world conflagration? And what's at the center of it? What is the moving power? Not the motivation. The motivation is power. But what is the instrument that has the potential to wreak disaster in the world? It is religion. And frankly, folks, if I have the truth, and I know I have the truth, and you know I have the truth, and you don't share that truth, and I say, let's sit down now as real partners in conversation and dialogue, are you going to sit at the table with me? I can't dialogue with you. I can witness to you. I can tell you what the truth is. But I won't be listening. I won't be open. My body language will tell me that, will tell you that I am not there to receive, but to give. And that's, of course, we just simply know that's true. And it's true in ordinary human experience. And it's true as well in the arena of faith among the religions of the world. Now, I want to suggest to you that I believe that God is one, and that our Christian understanding of God is an authentic and genuine window. Our gazing at God through Jesus Christ, I believe, is an open, clear, genuine window to God. But I do not believe that is the only window. And I cannot understand why the clarity of my vision of God through Jesus Christ is denigrated one bit. If there is someone gazing out another window who catches a glimpse of truth and reality as well. Now you see, if we don't come to terms with God creatively active in religious experience in general, I think we will end up in a far worse position than we've ever been before. Then we become vulnerable to the criticism of modern atheism that says religion is a human phenomenon. Religion is created out of the human person, out of the human feeling of weakness, inadequacy, or dependence. Religion is a human product projected outward on the screen of reality. But there is no reality beyond the feeling of need or dependence that is generated out of the human tummy. Modern atheism obviously cannot deny the fact of religion. It's universal. It's everywhere. What it can deny is that there is any God as a counterpart to human religious experience. Now, it seems to me that what we need to do is to affirm again what we have always affirmed, and that is that we are religious in response to God's coming to us. Religion is a human phenomenon, but not self-generated. Religion is response. If you hit me just right here, you'll get kicked in the jaw. It's a response. And religion is response. We don't initiate it. We didn't dream it up. We don't concoct it. It is not simply because we feel weak or alone or in the darkness or dependent. We respond because we have been encountered. We respond because God has come to us. God has come to us, and therefore we respond. And that response is religion. Religion is a human response to an initiating encounter of the eternal God. I don't think all religions are equally true or equally valuable. But I think all religion is a response to the reality of God. I think to be human is to be religious, because God has constituted us thus. Paul was struggling in his day with a gigantic movement of mind and understanding. Paul, Jew, Pharisee, committed, exclusivistic, passionate, and he got knocked on his bottom side by a bright light. Jesus, the living Lord, encountered him. And Paul said, "Ah!" Peter, Jew, fisherman, subject to foot and mouth disease, took a little nap one noon on a rooftop, had a vision. That which had always been unclean to him in the Jewish dietary laws were now declared by God to be clean. Peter, rise and eat. Peter said, "Not so, Lord." Well, you can't say, "Not so, Lord." You can say, "Not so." Well, you can say, "Lord," but you can't say, "Not so, Lord." Peter needed to be hit over the head in order for him to be shaken. The very foundations of that which he always considered to be true and true alone. And he went over to preach in Cornelius' house, a Gentile. And while he was preaching, the Spirit fell on Cornelius and his household. And Peter said, well, by God. Literally. By God. How can this be? And he concluded, I guess God shows no partiality. Paul, writing to the Romans, says, God has no favorites. He had started out that letter by saying, the Gentile world is mired in degeneracy, debauchery, and God has given them up, and they are under the judgment of God. And the Jews said, that's right. Way to go, Paul. They are something else, aren't they? And then Paul said, and you who are clapping, you're guilty of the same thing. And he came to 3:23 and he says, all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. In other words, there is a kind of universal human dilemma. And he had to set up that universal human dilemma because he had a universal divine solution. He said, the Gentile has blown it badly. And the Jews said, yay. And he said, you Jews, you have broken the law that you had. The Gentile didn't have a law, but you had a law. You've broken the law. He has a law written on his heart. There's something about the very constitution of a human being that a human being knows. So whether you had the law from Moses or whether you had this constitutional intuition, as a matter of fact, all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. God has had mercy on all. Because Paul says, look, is God the God of the Jews only? Why, no, he's God of the Gentiles too. That is, he is God of all humankind. Because when you said Jew and Gentile, you had included everybody. There were only Jews and non-Jews. And Paul's point was, if God is one, if God is at all, then God is one, which is the heart and center of our Jewish creed, then God, the one God, is the God of all humankind. Well, Paul was trying to break open the narrow vista of the traditional Jewish understanding, which saw Israel as specially chosen by God, and to hell with the rest. That was a major, major movement of understanding. Maybe that's where we are today. It's taken 2,000 years, but there's, I believe, a new openness to genuine spiritual experience in our world today. Sometimes it manifests itself in bizarre forms. And sometimes in the more traditional world religions that are seeing a new day and revivification. But there does seem to be, in our world, at the end of the 20th century, a spiritual openness, more so at this end of the century than at the other end, more so now than any time I can remember. Maybe the third millennium will be the time when that revelation of God in Israel that got broken open in order to embrace the Gentile as well we'll see a Christian tradition opening itself up to insight, understanding vistas that we have not yet dreamed of. One thing for sure, it'll make us go back and do our homework. No more of this kind of blasé, ho-hum. The truth is out, and we got it. Of course, we don't really know it anymore. It'll send us back to do our homework. You can't dialogue unless you're rooted. You can't share your faith and receive from another unless you have some sense of identity and some kind of sense of being traditioned. And then the other thing that just might happen is that we might be able to use the tremendous power of religious faith and experience for the building of world community rather than seeing it as the potential instrument for blowing up the earth. Well, is there one true religion? Yes, there is. But none of us have it. And one day, there will be no religion when we stand in the presence of the one true and eternal God, the one absolute, beyond all of our distinctions, the one beyond all of the historical conditionedness of our conceptions, beyond all of the distortions that will necessarily be a part of every human formulation. One day, we'll stand in the presence of God, who is grace. And then we will know, even as also we are known. Paul said, as it is now, we see in a mirror puzzling images, but then face to face. Our window gives us a clear shot on God. But it's time we get together with those who are gazing through other windows. Together we might enrich and enhance our experience of God and be the instruments of peace in our world through Jesus Christ, our Lord.